tonight on the show, we are talking about Witcher Hearts of Stone. And that's a fun little topic. We're also going to talk side missions, favourite side missions. Joining me to do that, good mates, Bardia and Carlo, guys.
Hey.
You got a few side quests you want to talk about?
No.
We've got a couple.
All right, you can leave.
Get out.
Both of you can leave. We've got all that coming up. We're also going to be talking about a bunch of game users, including some crazy Destiny stuff that's been happening.
Destiny crazy? Shocking.
We'll be going through all that on 2RRR's one and only gaming show, Big Head Mode. That's right, you are on Big Head Mode. And Carly, you were just asking who composed that theme.
That cool, funky intro?
No one really knows, to be honest.
Mystery?
It is a mystery. It just sort of showed up in a drive one time.
We all had some fun.
Why, buddy, what are you implying?
Nothing.
That someone here made it.
Maybe, who knows?
That's certainly what I'm inferring from your implications.
I made it, what do you want from me? I made it. What do you want? What do you want from me? What do you want to say?
Seems highly unlikely.
Thank you.
I hate you.
look, we are talking. A whole bunch of games tonight. Witcher: Hearts of Stone.
Witcher 3 DLC.
Bang, bang, bang! First of two big expansions, and technically, when you think about it, the first paid DLC for Witcher, because everything else had been free up till now.
And there's been a lot of free bonus content.
16 pieces of free bonus content.
16.
Was it 16? Was it? Interesting.
It sure was. In fact, it was 17, technically.
Those liars.
They called it 16, and then they threw in an extra one, which was, I mean, it was really a patch. It was extra kill animations.
That's right, yeah.
Which is something I feel like you could just, like, slip into a patch, but they were kind of like, cool, DLC.
We spoiled it.
Someone did all this cool art for it. Yeah. We got to put it somewhere that people can see it.
DLC.
yeah. But look, I had a great time with it. But you know what? Let's get to that in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, we're a week away from PAX.
Isn't it exciting?
Oh, so exciting.
This time next week, we'll be up on the stage doing bonus stage live in the main theater.
That's right. In fact, last week on the show, we got to very excitedly announce our guest from CD Projekt Red, who is coming on. And this time, now we have two more guests that I can say that are coming on, who are also equally exciting. You guys heard of a little game I like to call Just Cause 3.
To be honest, the first time I heard about it was when we booked these guests.
That'll change, Carlo. That'll change. Just Cause is a great open world series. Yeah. And we have two of the producers from the game. We have Roland Leselin and Omar Shakir.
And do we have the game on stage?
And they're going to be playing the game on stage.
Cause action.
And they're going to let us play it. Again, at one point, they're going to hand us the controller and let us play it on stage. And I'm going to ruin that game.
That's a bad decision on their part. We should not be
They don't know what I'm capable of.
Oh, they don't know how much I know about the game.
So much.
I've got a Just Cause.
Yeah.
And that cause is just.
Ooh. I mean, I could say, Carly, why haven't you played the game? And you could shrug and just say, Just Cause.
Enough.
Just Cause 3.
You didn't have to add the 3.
I just liked it.
I just liked the 3.
Yeah.
Just Cause 3.
Just Cause 3.
Just Cause 3.
Cause 3, what? All
right. But look, that's very exciting, having them on.
It's huge.
That's two big games that we're going to be playing and chatting on stage. I mean, and we're also going to be playing a little game that we have been physically unable to stop Carlo from talking about. Called Gwent.
It's going to be high-paced, high-octane fun.
Live on stage is going to be great.
It's going to be two decks, monsters versus Skirtel. I'll be playing Skirtel, my competitor, Lee Namo. It will be high stakes. Some of our best cards will be on the line. It's going to be nuts.
Yeah, and it's going to be real interesting for all the people in the audience who've never played Gwent. Deliberately didn't play Gwent.
Do I want to ask before, is it fun?
Oh, look, it'll be fun. It'll be fun. Right, yeah.
Your love for this game, I think, is so wonderful. Like, it's so good, like, lovely to see.
It's wonderful, but it does go to dark places.
Oh,
sometimes.
It gets scary. You know?
It does go to places 3 a.m. where Carlo wakes up in a street in a nightgown, doesn't remember how he got there, just covered in cards. You know, a Northern Realms deck.
Yeah, those just, Northern Realm decks, they're worth it, though.
They're worth it.
Every game of Gwent is a game of Gwent worth having Gwented.
Oh, okay.
That's how I live my life.
This is what it's doing
well,
to
Well, that's
him.
The quote that The Witcher 3 starts with.
It's on the box.
A black screen, and then that quote
game
fades
of Gwent
up.
Is a game Gwented.
Nothing Gwented, nothing Gwented.
It's just the Gwent.
CD Projekt Red 2015.
Nothing Gwented, nothing Gwained, as they say.
Stop it.
I'm so
it.
Sorry. Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Hey, look, have you guys had a chance to play any games Gwent? Recently other than Gwent?
I've been playing a lot of Metal Gear Solid 5. I'm trying to finish that
You've
game.
You've been going gangbusters.
I have
it.
Been. And I got to a point in it where I thought it was ending and it came to this big climactic. There was a big boss fight and the credits started rolling. It was the end. And I was just like, that was a shitty ending. Like, that was terrible. I raised more questions. I was just as confused as I was before. This is awful. And then as soon as the 5-minute credit sequence ended, it said, coming up in part 2. And I was just like, I'm only halfway.
Boom.
Why put a credit sequence halfway? Anyway, it's incredible.
And you've kept playing since then?
I've kept playing since then.
And you really were halfway, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. You were 100% gung-ho for that game.
Yep.
And just shouting its praises, literally from rooftops.
It was like that one
time I saw you on that
rooftop.
On the rooftop,
yeah.
In the rain, just screaming into the lightning storm.
Yeah.
And you were there, cowering in the corner with your Gwent decks, and it was a really dark time for the two of us, actually.
It was extraordinary.
But has that opinion changed? I know Carlo hasn't wavered in his Gwent resolve, but have you changed at all for the better or for the worse?
I haven't changed, no. But no. My complaints are still very much like the same. There's not enough story, and I just feel like the missions is just sort of like scattered all over the place, and I want more like linearity.
Well, so, you should be careful with change, buddy. It's a dangerous thing.
I don't like change, Ben.
Fear change.
I don't like
change.
There's
also some real, really weird, like, gender politics and some pretty entrenched sexism within the game, which does make it pretty problematic.
Although
I noticed in Japanese games, though. Like, that's such a big part
it's
of
not
it.
An excuse.
No, but... That's like that's it's part of
you're saying that the problems with the Japanese games industry,
kind of, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a much bigger argument than I think we can have. I mean, because like only one of us here really plays Japanese games, and it's pretty much Metal Gear Solid,
yeah, and it's great.
I did notice though, funnily enough, that there's some more costume DLC for Metal Gear Solid. There's 3 costumes you can unlock for male characters, 2 for female characters. But male characters, like, you know, full head-to-toe military suit, head-to-toe stealth suit, and then a tuxedo. Women, it's like an army suit that's just unzipped down to the belly button.
Awful. I mean,
and then, like,
horrible.
A naval commander suit that's unzipped down to the belly button.
That's awful.
Yeah.
That's so atrocious.
It's just like, come on, guys. I mean...
Yeah. Also, you can't recruit women. You can only rescue them as POWs.
They join your squad and they join your army. They walk around. You can punch.
Although
them in
that's the same. That's the same for all the men, really, isn't it?
What? Well, there are men and women in
yeah.
In your...
Like you just recruit everyone in general as POWs.
Yeah.
And there's like one mission where there's a woman POW being used as bait, surrounded by snipers. You played that mission yet?
I don't think
no.
so.
There's one. She's just in the middle of a stadium with snipers all around you. All around her, and you have to take out the snipers and then rescue her.
That sounds awesome.
I think that was just a real life
that
thing.
Actually happened. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Maybe I just keep blanking out.
That was Gwent
from
color.
Gwent.
Yeah,
yeah. It's pretty problematic. I feel
Are you
as
crying?
A game.
Yeah.
A single. He just can't handle it anymore. You know.
No. Yeah. No. It certainly has.
It's clearly left an impression on you, though, buddy.
It has. It hit me here.
But still playing a little bit of Metal Gear Solid.
Really good game.
Deary me. Well, look, why don't we go to some music and come back?
Crank it.
Because I want to get into this Destiny news that is pretty inflammatory.
We're all waiting to hear it, Ben.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Wake the White Wolf by Miracle of Sound. We'll be back after this. We're back. Carlo just telling us his very real struggle.
Oh, it's
Gwent.
So legit.
We talk about it a lot. I didn't realize... How? I mean, look. Let's do this again, Carlo. Just take us through your questing experience in The Witcher.
So, every time I get to a town, I search out all the merchants, if there's an innkeeper, if there's anybody who is like a high-stakes Gwent match, then I play all the Gwent that I can in that town. Maybe I'll do a quest, and I'll just go to the next town and play all the Gwent.
And I was saying he builds his Witcher 3 experience around the game of Gwent.
And
not
I totally
around the
had,
quest.
Like,
Geralt's is like, he's a monster hunter in his spare time, but really he's a professional shock. Gwent player.
I just won the ultimate Gwent tourney, you know, and I thought, now I'll finally have all the cards, because I've just played so much Gwent, you know? And I haven't got all the cards yet. I haven't got a complete...
In your game...
I haven't got the achievement for getting a full deck. I haven't beaten that quest.
You've made Geralt a
your
problem
Polish
gambler.
Your Polish Geralt is a problem gambler and a card
shark. Some quests
joke.
I only do because I know that I'll be able to play Gwent at the end of them. Like...
Oh my god.
This is like
Yennefer's deep tugging on his arm going, Geralt, we've got to go. Hold on, one more game.
We have to find Ciri. You have to find your daughter. Like
Geralt, you've got a problem. Who is Ciri?
There was
a druid
And like in the Anne Crate area.
Oh yeah, yeah.
On Spikarug, is that big one?
Yeah, that's the one.
And I was like, yep, there's this druid, and I know that he's a Gwent player because everyone said you're going to go and play a game of Gwent, but he needs you to do 3 quests for him. So I did those 3 quests just so I could play him in Gwent. I didn't get like, I was like, I don't want these potion things. I don't make potions because I just play Gwent.
Oh my god,
that's so
we need
it. Hard to
help.
Hear. It's so
I
awful.
I only have been to about 3 of the islands in the Skellige Archipelago because I'm afraid of going out
because
I'm like I'm
because
just
you know there'll be merchants.
There'll be more Gwent.
Well, look, we'll periodically throughout the show in the coming months, we'll keep taking a little peek into the terrifying nightmare that is Carlo's life. But for now, here's another terrifying nightmare that I'm going to call the Story of Destiny.
Okay.
Jason Schreier on Kotaku has been just sort of investigating ever since it, you know, it came out months ago that in the last year of Destiny's development, they'd thrown out the original story and really hastily done a new one. Yeah. He's been trying to find out why, and he's gone around and just dug up basically all these facts from extra sources and people who were around at the time. And what they did is they had a completely different story for Destiny.
So a story
3 years ahead of its release. And like a year out, they showed the supercut, which is when they put all the cutscenes. So they were fully cutscened as well. They show all the cutscenes in order.
Yeah.
To kind of give an idea of the story flow. Mm. 2 hours of cutscenes. And after those cutscenes, the head honchos at Bungie were just like, we don't like that. We're going to completely start from scratch.
So what was the story?
Like, all we know, like, their main complaint is that they thought it was too esoteric and too sort of, they wanted something more linear, apparently. They thought it was a bit campy. These are just the words that, like, so we don't know exactly what the story is, except that a couple of story details. It was meant to be about, you know, Rasputin, that they always reference, this sort of robot war mind that lives on Earth somewhere. Mm-hmm. It was all meant to be about you trying to rescue the Rasputin from the Hive. And the entire third act, the Dreadnought, which they brought in as this extra planet for Taken King, was like the final act of the game. So it was you rescuing Rasputin from the Dreadnought and like chasing them across the planets and stuff and trying to rescue this guy. And then it was going to be like you rescue him and then it was just going to lead to more mysteries.
So
like
weird.
You find out that he was going to be, I've got a photo which is relevant for radio, but he was going to be an actual Exo character.
Oh,
Rasputin.
Wow.
It was like a guy you actually had to rescue.
Oh, wow.
And then when you rescued him, it was going to be, the reveal was going to be that he was just sort of a puppet that was being manually controlled by this huge AI,
so they had
bunker
this story.
Thing, under, you know, under...
They had the story that they had 3 years out. That was obviously something that they were talking about whilst they were developing the game.
Not just that. The story was going to be fully explained at the beginning of every single quest, and every quest was going to end with a 5-minute cinematic cutscene.
And they threw that away and replaced it with nothing.
So their
like,
complaint,
there's no story in that game.
Their complaint was that it was too esoteric and...
So let's just get rid of it.
And wasn't linear. Like, that was their complaint, and they came out with
they
the
wanted,
game
yeah,
they
yeah,
came
yeah.
out with? Like,
well, I mean, it's hard to say because there is no... I mean, based on other accounts, some people that this Jenna has spoken to has said the story was really weird and kind of not very good. Others have said they quite liked it. It got quite deep in parts. So it sounds like whatever it was... It was divisive,
yeah.
And they just sort of went with something like so. Basically, what happened is they called it. What did they call it? They had this really bizarre, like sort of term for these meetings that the head honchos would have. Mm. They basically took on Iron Bar meetings, is what they called them, and it was like the heads of Bungie, the head of art, the head of, you know, production, all that stuff, would kind of get together and just, they hashed out the story themselves and made out their own story based on kind of the world-building stuff that this original writer had done. But I just, it's bizarre.
They completely threw it away. And it's so weird to hear that happening to such a huge game with such a, you know, huge following and huge, you know.
And so that was where, like, one of the main things they did in that meeting, the Iron Bar meetings, is, because originally I think it had been a more linear story. They wanted to have that open plan, you know, director screen where you pick what planet you go to.
And, yeah.
Like, they clearly wanted it to be more sort of...
That's so weird.
Open, but that had never been what the game was.
That's really weird.
And then they pushed... It got delayed, so because the story was not ready. But then instead of fixing the story, they spent those 6 months on polish of the gameplay and then just kind of shipped the story as it was.
Yeah. It's almost like they forgot that they had ditched the story and they were like, oh, shit, we don't have a story.
So the reason Taken King is good is not only because the concept of the location is based on something that was already designed, but it's the first... It's like they actually brought the writers, the writing staff who was completely cut out of that process... They actually brought them on to do their job and start writing stuff.
Start writing a story.
Yeah.
So now they just have to retcon the entire game and make something worth playing, and then maybe I'll buy Taken King.
it's there's all these little details of stuff that got cut as well that makes me think this is just what we're going to keep seeing over the next year. Like, stuff that was in the original game that got cut and now is going to be, like, DLC. Like, originally you
were... Which is actually kind of genius, because it means that, like, especially with this story having just come out as well, it's kind of like...
What, to make it last longer, sort of thing.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, to keep that tail on that comet going.
Totally. Which is something they're going to have to do, because that game...
Just keep charging you $80 a pop.
That's it.
No, well, all that, I mean...
Oh, that's so expensive.
The advantage of that, though, is that, I mean, they have said all DLC is going to be free now with the whole microtransaction thing that they brought in. So, until Destiny 2 comes out. I think, like, the planets... I mean, this is one of the things they said. They've realized that basically that model isn't viable of, like... Lots of DLC. Like, they want to sort of have one big expansion and then drip feed the free stuff, it seems like. I don't know. But, God, the more you hear about behind-the-scenes stuff at Destiny, the more it just seems like Bungie were just given huge budget, huge freedom, and then just kind of just didn't know how to rein it in. Didn't have a focus.
Considering their previous game.
Big old cluster frack.
Yeah.
But maybe the success of Halo that we've, you know... always assumed was Bungie. Maybe it wasn't just them, but it was the fact that Microsoft did have them on a leash. Like, it was that level of constant interference that kind of made sure that they were on some track at least.
And Bungie certainly are a bigger company now than they were when they were making Halo, or at least the first few Halos.
How did Activision let them... They must have had... I guess they had full creative control if Activision just let them scrap the story a year out.
Yeah. I think... Yeah, I don't know. We can only...
You can only dream.
That's it.
And hope for the future.
I hate you.
You know, another... Like, on the subject of just weird studio mysteries, this whole Kojima thing just keeps getting weirder.
Okay, so I found, like...
So you've heard now, like, the latest with Kojima is, you know, is he off Metal Gear Solid? Is he on Metal Gear Solid? And then the report came out last week that he's left Konami.
Yeah.
And now Konami are denying it and saying, no, he's just on vacation.
Weird.
Their exact words were... I thought were really sinister. Currently, Kojima and the development team have finished developing Metal Gear Solid and are taking a long time off work.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
A long time. That's like he's just sitting in a room, staring at a wall, thinking about what he's done.
Kojima, where'd you get those bruises? I fell. He fell. It's like it's really overlordy. But I thought he had already left Konami.
Well, that's the thing. Like, his name started disappearing off things, off the websites and that. But Konami are just being really... adamant, and like they've said, currently Kojima is listed as a company employee, but their language is so, like, you know, currently he is. It sort of doesn't rule out the fact that tomorrow he might not be, or the day after that.
Maybe he doesn't exist. Maybe he's a robot. That? Like, we talk about the idea of this original Destiny script. He was being controlled by a giant AI.
Yep.
Why not? You know,
that's true.
He's right. Why not?
Maybe Kojima is going to take things over at Bungie. Imagine Kojima would fit in great with Destiny. Just like Dinklebot would just be a single giant boob.
Yep.
Floating boob.
Yep. But he'll have a reason for why it's a boob.
Oh, yeah, no, he'll have a really great reason. Yep. Like that boob's the last of its kind, a peaceful race that needs to be preserved. Oh, God. Can we make Kojima work on Destiny, please?
Please.
Please make it happen. Another little thing as well. Sony have announced that the PlayStation 4 is getting a price drop in Australia. It's going to be $70 cheaper. $479.95.
The Xbox One got a huge price drop as well.
It did. It went down to, I think, $500.
No, it's cheaper than that. Expensive. It's $390, I think.
Is it real? No, really?
Yeah.
$390. That might be American prices.
Nah, mate.
Go ahead and get yourself some.
Oh. There we go. This is a Google this is competition.
Riveting.
We see. Well, look, the reason they brought this up.
$399 at JB Hi-Fi.
Wow.
$399. Holy moly.
Really great price.
So, look, I mean, the reason I wanted to bring it up is because I thought, just quickly, it'd be interesting to talk to you guys. We all doubled down on the Xbox.
Yep.
Have you guys had any post-Xbox regrets?
No.
Have you ever thought,
the UI sucks. Still.
You were, like the dashboard sort of experience? Yeah.
The party support's really rubbish, too.
Yeah.
That said, though, I was astounded by how easy it was to set up Star Wars Battlefront games. That just seemed to work flawlessly, had very few dropouts, and if you did drop out, it was very easy to get back into the game, unlike GTA 5.
Are you serious? Remember when the three of us tried to play Battlefront, and it was just a mess?
Oh, it was a little bit of a mess.
You kept joining other teams, and then it was like, you and I got in the game, and he didn't.
But that said, it was so much more streamlined than GTA 5.
But I think that's less about the console, and that's more about... It's one part, like, the servers, and then one part, you know, just the... UI, how easy it is to join. Like the Battlefront beta had a really easy, there are all your friends that are online, press one button to join them. It was like bang. GTA is like, you know, sit in a menu for 10 minutes and hope you play something.
Yeah.
So I guess to answer your question, no, I don't think I haven't had any post Xbox regrets.
Yeah, I really like it.
Yeah.
And that's Titanfall. Great. Titanfall.
It's just a good time, you guys. We have bloody laughs.
Even though there's not been that many exclusives, Child of Light was pretty fun.
Right.
Ori and the Blind Forest.
That was on.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, Ori and the Blind Forest, though. That was fun. And Titanfall still holds up. I still think it's one of the great multiplayer experiences.
It really does.
It's really fun.
It's probably going to be on all consoles for Titanfall 2.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Mm.
But I am very tempted to get a PlayStation 4 for some of the games that they announced at this year's E3.
Yeah.
Horizon.
Yeah. Uncharted. That's a huge one.
Yeah, four. I've never played those games.
And now's your best chance because the Drake's collection just came out.
That's true. I don't know what that is.
It's great.
Just a collection of Drakes. You know, Drakes, they're like a sort of infant dragon.
Yeah, yeah.
Found in most D&D campaigns. But look, we can talk about it in the break. I thought, you know, before the next segment, we could play a bit of Gwent. So this is Drink Up, There's More. The music to be heard while you play Gwent.
He is so happy.
We'll be back after this.
Here we go.
Alright, guys, welcome back. This is the music I chose for side missions.
Certainly is. What is it?
Earthworm Jim.
That's the Earthworm Jim bonus mission.
It sure is. It is one of great ones.
You fight that giant guy in the sky.
There's one where you fight Psychro. There's one where you're flying through space trying to avoid asteroids. There's one where you're trying to catch mutant puppies on a giant marshmallow to stop them from bursting into pieces on the ground.
Don't stop the music, Ben. It's really adding something.
It's really soothing.
Yeah.
I just found it really distracting. No, look, let's talk about... I mean, originally this was... I wanted to talk about bonus stages, like bonus levels.
Which isn't something that's really been relevant recently.
It is for us. And then you two bloody clowns were like, oh, I can't think of a single game that I've played that has a bonus stage.
Honestly,
I mean,
shocking.
Mario's got
it's
one.
Absolutely shocking.
I've never played any of the Mario games.
Almost every game, Ben.
Would have some kind of bonus little...
Bonus stage.
Stage or level or like...
Every game has a bonus stage, Ben.
Some kind of little bonus thing.
Skyrim?
Yeah, absolutely.
Has a bonus stage.
Yeah, totally.
What do you mean?
The whole bloody game, mate.
It's all just one bonus.
Bloody game. I mean, if you looked at the mods, there's bound to be a bonus.
No, no, no.
The whole of Skyrim is a bonus stage for Oblivion.
Exactly. What about when you go back in time? That was a bonus.
Gwent, though, probably. Gwent count?
Is kind of a bonus.
The real revelation for me, though, okay, since, I don't want to get thrown under the bus here.
Okay.
Carlo's never played a Mario game.
Yeah.
Sorry?
He's never played a Mario game.
You're not missing much. Is that controversial? I don't like Mario.
I think that's controversial.
I've watched a lot of Mario games.
I can't believe you've never played a Mario game.
Mm. No. No.
This is...
Not one.
It's just staggering.
This is a day of revelations for him.
I played a lot of Mario Party.
Oh.
Had a lot of laughs, a lot of good times.
That means you're like the ring-in who shows up to Mario's party and everyone's like, who is this guy? We haven't met him before.
Mario's like,
I don't know him. I never met him.
Yeah, I'm one of the other princesses, like Princess Apricot.
Everyone just assumes you're like one of their
cousins. Oh, yeah,
he's at all the parties. He hangs out all the time. What's his name?
Don't know. He's always there, though.
Who invited you to the party? What? Yeah, I like to party.
Yeah.
So, look, I opened it up to side missions because I guess bonus stages...
I've never played a game of side missions.
Carlo, that's just because, like, given on, based on your the way you play Gwent, you just misconstrue side missions as the actual game.
Yep, that's it. Yep, you forget that there's a bigger game around the card game.
I was playing Witcher. There's this crazy side mission where you have to save Ciri, the daughter.
That's very much how I have been treated.
I know, it's so weird. It's great.
So look, let's talk side missions. You know,
let's talk them.
Let's get open about it. Let's wrap about it.
Have a lot of laughs.
What about you, buddy? What is the best side mission you reckon you've ever played in a game?
Best side mission in a game. That's a rough one. It would have to be. I think it. One that sticks out is the Megaton side quest in Fallout 3.
Ooh,
That whole story arc, and the decision whether or not to like destroy it or save it, and that.
Or just do nothing away.
Because these are the options that you have.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Moral dilemmas in a side quest are good.
Always good.
It makes them feel a little bit like there's more substance beyond just, you know, a little thing that results in a trinket or a reward of some kind.
But it also goes down to things like, I mean, in a game like Mirror's Edge, I loved Mirror's Edge. Mirror's Edge had the time trial maps, which were like these weird geometric shapes that you had to run around. But that was an add-on to the game that I probably spent more time in than the actual game itself.
Mm.
So it's like even things like that they add on. A little bonus, a little bit of good times.
I always really...
There's a stage of bonus there.
The one that sort of sticks to me is like some of the missions you could find on planets in Mass Effect 2. You know, you pick up a distress signal.
Yeah. Mm.
And one of them was a missile control center that had been taken over and you had to choose between... You could only stop one of the nukes.
Yeah.
You choose between a colony and a... spaceport.
That's right.
And that was one of my favorite, because that was one of the ones where I felt like there was not a good or bad decision. It was
Someone's gonna be killed.
A pragmatic versus. Yeah.
What'd you choose?
Spaceport, man. Like,
I don't think I chose. Did I choose? I don't know if I chose spaceport.
You
chose the space colony.
I think I chose.
You saved the colony.
I can't remember.
But what are those colonists gonna do for the? You know, what are they gonna do?
Hey, man.
What about our fleet? It's out there getting pummeled by the...
Are you saying you saved the spaceport?
Yeah.
I thought you were saying you chose to blow up the spaceport.
No.
No.
You blow up the colony.
You're a monster.
You're an animal.
I'm not a monster. We get out.
You to be like, I've done something wrong. I'm like,
that was the other way around.
Our women and men of war are out there fighting against...
They made their choice.
Are out there fighting against the Reapers. They're fighting against the Reapers. And they got ships and they're getting damaged. Where are they going to get repaired? Not in a colony. Not in a colony. They're getting repaired at a spaceport.
You're saying the colonists made their choice to just live?
Yeah. How dare they?
Look, the colonists...
Women, children, I'm assuming?
Yeah, it doesn't matter, Bardia. It doesn't matter. It's the greater good.
Let me ask you, Carlo. Did saving that spaceport ever help you in Mass Effect 3 in any tangible way?
I like to think that it did.
Except people would talk about you afterwards in the game and be like, wow, did you hear that thing he did? Like, he destroyed. He had a choice.
You know what?
She had a choice.
You know all those moments in Mass Effect 3 where you just stop
touching
the buttons on the controller and Shepard doesn't look at anything? That's actually part of the game. That's Shepard just staring into distance and reflecting on the horrible thing she's done.
On the acts of war.
Yeah, jeez, you know, we're learning so much about Kylo.
By saving that spaceport, I've maybe saved hundreds of colonies. Hundreds. Saving that colony.
Maybe. Maybe I mean, saved.
Even if you save two, who's even if you save not? Two, that's one more colony than you saved by blowing the colony up.
Oh no.
Oh my god. Okay. All right. How about me? Yeah. Well, I mean you just reminded me of one then when you mentioned Fallout 3. I always loved the one with the family of cannibals who live under the sewers.
Oh, they're like, we eat legs. Yeah, I love that.
No, that you think that they're vampires, but they're actually like a pretty
well adjusted,
civilized, yeah. well adjusted
yeah.
community, and it's like, you know, what do you do? Do you kind of go, okay,
sure. Blow up a colony.
You can join them, or you can kill them. And sort of, it's sort of like, you know, do you enact justice or do you... I think if you join them, you get the cannibal perk, which lets you, if you find a sleeping person... You can
eat them.
You can eat them or feed on them for extra health or something.
The game was so weird, man. It was bizarre. Was I'm so excited for the next one.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Side quests like that, though. I like a side quest where you kind of go, I mean, everyone thinks you're evil, but, I mean, you seem pretty reasonable. The thing you do is despicable, but... Yeah, apocalypse, well, shrug.
Yeah, it happens. I don't know if this is a side quest, but in The Last of Us, you would find those notes. This is not really like a side quest.
The Firefly notes, or
the not Ishmael. It was like you would find.
Oh yeah, in the sewer duct.
In the sewer duct, yeah. And that story would play out as you read these notes, and it was like a little. It was a deviation from the main thing, but it was. I mean, it was incredible. The story that it had contained in that. In that small area.
Hidden story, I guess.
It was like, I don't know if you would call that a side mission or a bonus.
I wouldn't either.
Well done, Bards, for saying it, really.
That's a good one to bring up on a different show with a different topic, maybe. Yeah,
certainly.
Yeah, maybe like in-world logs. Oh, logs and stories.
Yeah. Really, yeah.
Lore building. I really liked in Perfect Dark on 64 had this thing where if you... finished every mission on the basic setting and unlocked one mission, and if you finished it on Special Agent, you got another mission, and if you finished them all on Perfect Agent, you got another, and if you finished all three of those bonus missions, then it unlocked a fourth level, and they were really fun, those sort of bonus missions that you could unlock.
Did you ever play, there was a mode in a co-op that you could do that was called Counter-Operative?
Where one person was playing against you.
Yeah, one person was every henchman, and like they're dying, like an agent from the Matrix just respawn. As like a nearby henchman.
Yeah.
And the other, like, player one is just running through the level as normal, and player two is just trying to stop them as...
Was I'm surprised
henchmen.
That hidden, or was that a part of the game?
No, that was just a mode you could play.
That's really cool.
Yeah, just like a two-player...
Yeah.
Like,
I'm surprised that it hasn't come into many modern games. Like
that'd be great. Imagine if you could do that in... Well, it showed up... There was a not a very good game, but Resident Evil 6 had this mode where... random players take control of at zombies at any point in your campaign.
Dying Light does that?
Yeah. Although, so Dying Light kind of initiates multiplayer mode, but the way they did it in Resident Evil, it was just behind the scenes, so you never know. Like, if you have online turned on, any zombie or monster you fight around the corner could be controlled by a human. So, like, you might just be aiming and it might just suddenly... Like duck and then run at you or something.
Like this zombie's a bit better than he should be. What's going on?
That was a really cool mood.
Yeah, Left 4 Dead did that as well. Yeah. You could have four people, 4v4.
Yep.
But yeah, it would be fun having it in some newer games. I mean, that would have been awesome.
Be great in Halo. But in Destiny, you could come down as a fallen walker. Sup?
Hi. Or in like Metal Gear Solid, or in I don't know why I'm thinking of this game. Splinter Cell Blacklist. Wow, really don't know why I'm thinking of that game.
Why are you thinking of that game, Bardia?
But it could be great to have, like, other players playing the...
That's what I think. I'd love that in Metal Gear Solid, particularly.
I'm struggling.
you guys. Well. I'm not doing well. I apologize.
You know what would be great in Destiny?
Playing the ghost.
If you could secretly...
playing his Dinklebot. Just sitting there. What are you doing?
Except chilling. You don't see what's going on half the time. It's only when they bring you out where they're about to leave. Oh, this level looked really great. Oh, we're going. Now, I was going to say if you could... discreetly joined friends' raids and just ruin it for them.
Let's be honest, people do that anyway.
Just be like, oh, you're having trouble with the raid, are you? Did that one guy on the hill keep sniping you?
Shame.
Yeah, look, that's what I'd do.
You're a jerk. You're an
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah. Certainly.
So look, I'm glad we can all talk about bonus stages and game lore and all the topics.
And how Carl is a terrible person.
And Gwent. So much Gwent. But look, this is Hunt or Be Hunted. Let's talk about Hunt.
What song are you going to play, though, Ben?
Okay, good joke.
Okay,
Carl,
really good.
You're on Tutor Line 88. Well. Let's talk Witcher, because it's something we haven't talked about in a while, guys.
It's fresh in my mind.
Okay. First things first, I want to get this out of the way. Hearts of Stone, first expansion. There is no Gwent, Carlo, so we're not talking Gwent for the next 8 minutes.
I would like to counter that and just ask, really?
Yes.
Huh. Interesting.
I mean, look. You can play Gwent with people in the DLC.
Okay,
you've immediately reneged on your.
And there are new Gwent cards.
Okay. What? Really?
Oh yeah. There are some new Gwent cards you can get from these unique players. You can't play. But look, apart from that.
Oh my god, he's like jumping. He looks so pained.
But look, it's apart from that. You just don't. I mean, they're real good Gwent cards. Though. Real good Gwent cards.
He's sweating. Yeah. He
wants the deck cards. Northern Realm cards.
Okay, come on, let's keep going.
No, so look, the first expansion pack, it was weird going into it because, you know, we did get a lot of free content, and in some ways you would think that makes you more forgiving in whatever the first paid content is, but for me it raised the bar, because I'd played a lot of side missions for free already, and so I felt like for this to be an add-on, it has to be a pretty expansive. It has to feel like a big narrative chunk.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to say it is. It is.
Oh, the game's so big. It's too big.
It's not too big, buddy. You haven't played it for 6 months.
I know, and it stresses me out. Going back to it causes me anxiety.
It's really great. It's really great from a narrative perspective, from a gameplay perspective. It raises the gameplay in a few little ways. One of the biggest things it adds to the sort of game world mechanic, which is very expensive, but, you know, for people who like completing stuff, is it adds a new level of rune crafting. It brings in some people from a far off land called Ulfia, and it's hard to know what kind of region they're meant to be from, but they finally some people who aren't white in the Witcher, which I know was a big complaint a lot of people had.
Yeah.
So there's at least a little bit of ethnic diversity now, based on this sort of like. It's a big theme, the whole, like, they're called Ulfiri, and it's kind of like they sound a little Persian or...
Great choice, really, really good people.
Yeah, and that you kind of get embroiled in this conflict with some of them, and then you meet some, and they make you stuff, and so they're spread throughout. There's cool weapons based on their style of weaponry. You can get, like, some silk robes for Geralt, which didn't suit me, but some people might like him, because the silk texture's real nice.
Good on your skin.
Look like real silk.
Yeah, real good.
So there's that kind of stuff. There's like, that's one thing I really liked, is that it just sort of, the world has expanded out now. Like, you feel like you don't go to this place. This DLC is still primarily
it
located.
It comes to you?
In the, yeah, in a sense, it does. Most of this is in like the northern part of Velen, where you didn't really do much, like, and sort of Oxenfurt region.
Yeah, and so, well, speak for yourself, Ben, because I did a lot of things.
You spent a lot of... When you say a lot of things, you mean you just did one thing a lot of times?
Yes.
Yes. but it sort of fleshed out. I'm not sure if they've added new areas there, or if those areas were always there and they've just given you quests there, but it definitely feels like there's more in that sort of top right-hand corner of the map. There's like farmsteads, and there's like... little villages, and
there's a
huge
lot up there.
Haunted mansion sort of area.
And do you, like, venture out of that area, or is it, like, does the DLC...
No, it's all still based in the... Yeah. So this one's based in the world. The next one, apparently, is bigger and is a new region. And that's not till next year or sometime.
Yeah.
This one, and they say the narrative is about 10 hours, which I think, I guess, would be right.
Oh, my gosh.
That's so much.
But the thing about this DLC that I liked the most about it, and some might disagree, is that it's not chock-a-block full of a lot of side missions. There's a few here and there, but it is primarily the main narrative. Like, it has roughly a 10-hour main story, which is really rewarding.
That's huge.
Great characters, really good story stuff, some really unique stuff. Like, there's a level, for instance, and this has been written out there and out and about, so it's, you know, it's a mild spoiler, but there's a level where you have to attend a wedding as a ghost. Like, Geralt is possessed by a ghost at a wedding.
What?
So, it's this constant struggle between this, like, really sort of extravagant ghost and Geralt, who's just not happy with the situation at all. He's like, come, Geralt, let's talk to the beautiful women. And Geralt's like, F you. It's great. And there's lots of variety. It doesn't feel like they're just throwing new scenarios at you. They put a lot of work into the story. I mean, it's clearly something that, they'd already conceived before the game came out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. So you're looking at new monsters. Like, some of the story goes to darker places than I think a lot of the main game went to.
Really?
To rival the Bloody Baron side quest, which was, that was really
heavy.
Good
yeah.
and heavy.
Yeah,
yeah. It goes to similar places like that where the themes are incredibly adult, as grey and mixed and ambiguous as The Witcher was at its best. Mm. And so, like, yeah, I mean, some people might value this DLC in terms of, you know, everything gets itemized these days in DLC. How much does it give me? You know, how many new missions does it give me? How many new this?
Yeah.
This, you're looking at one incredibly engaging single-player narrative.
But
with, with a character who's one of the most compelling characters, I think, in the Witcher universe. And something that I sort of had to step away from at the end of because I felt like I'd finished the game all over again.
Really?
Yeah.
That's huge.
So look, it has a big recommendation from me, and it's just a great way to kind of add more to your Witcher experience. The one thing I'd say is you have to be level 30 to do it, which is kind of the level you average out at when you finish the main game. So it's kind of designed for you to play it
after
the main game.
The main quest.
Yeah.
Okay.
I always feel weird when they do that because I'm sort of like, I want to play it, but I can't, and it sort of fits
better into the scope of this just in terms of narrative too, because there's the one thing that I thought was weird is there's a new romance option. There's a new character, Shani, who is a character from the books,
the medical,
she was a former medical student at Oxenfurt, and now she's like a sort of army medic,
yeah.
And I felt like sometimes the narrative kind of trapped me into a romance with her.
Yeah, right.
Well, because you romanced her. Well, you could romance her in Witcher.
Yeah, and back in the
the first one.
Back in the original books, he had a sort of a rough fling, but it felt weird for me because I'd already firmly chosen to be with Yennefer by the end of the game, and so it sort of felt like the game was forcing me to play the field when I didn't really want to.
Yeah,
but other than that,
it's an odd complaint, but it's
yeah. I felt dirty.
Yeah. Oh, really?
I was like, no, I don't want these dialogue. No. Geralt, stop being flirty.
Stop
That's
it.
Gross.
Stop it.
But yeah, look. Other than that, it was a really great narrative expansion.
Yeah.
And I'd say if you want more Witcher, go for it. Get into it.
Fill your boots.
Fill your boots, buddy. As a saying that definitely exists.
It exists.
Look, let's go to some messages and then wrap this bad boy up.
Can't
You're
wait.
On 2RRR 88.5 FM. Well, that brings us to the end of another show for another week. Thanks for tuning in.
But Ben,
Badia and Carlo, thanks for coming in. And also, this is probably the last chance we're going to have to talk to you before we're actually at Melbourne. I mean, we'll have a pre-recorded show next week because we're going to be, as Carlo said at the top of the show, on stage doing bonus stage at PAX. At the time that we're on air.
Yeah, definitely come by. If you're down at PAX,
yeah.
If you've got any cool cosplay, come and show us. We'll put it up on the website.
That's right. Come and say g'day to us in general.
If you want
to play
Gwent,
we will be hanging out.
I will be all Friday in the board game area playing Gwent.
Come play Gwent with Carlo. Or even we're going to be hanging out at the Axis of Awesomes table in the main entrance area to PAX. So come and say g'day. Say hi, we'll have a chat, we'll have a few laughs.
We might even say hey back.
And then and come and see all of our panels. We have bonus stage on Friday, 9:30, in the main theatre. It's a big theatre, so maybe get there a little bit early. we have 5:30 on the Saturday, Big Head Mode versus Geek Bomb, doing trivia. And then at 8 o'clock that night, we have Truly Awful Games. We're going to play some awful, awful games with some funny people.
It's going to be a good time.
All the details are on Facebook. Facebook.com.
Big Head Mode 2RRR.
Go check it out. We're going to play out with Lady of Worlds by Miracle of Sound. Till then, see you guys next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.